Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee, June 14, 1999, 8 a.m., Hearing Room 174.
Decree, there's still quite a bit of negotiations on, so I'm going to adjourn the hearing on House Bill 2153, and we'll carry it over to tomorrow's agenda. Open, Nikki, did you want to make a comment? Okay. Are you paying French and taxes? Now you're living in town? Okay. All right. Well, we'll promise we'll do something that too many things are being added in and not enough being deleted. So, okay. Well, order that we open up a public hearing work session on House Bill 5015. Economic Development Department, Mr. Scott, would you like to come back up, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bill Scott. I'm the director of the Oregon Economic Development Department. I have with me this morning Sam Turkin. He's the deputy director of the department. And if you recall when we originally laid out our schedule, we were planning to do a performance measurement presentation at the beginning, and we don't need to take up any significant amount of the committee's time with that, but I just wanted to pass out for the committee the materials we would have presented and let Sam draw your attention to a few highlights there. Following that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just recap our program option packages, and then we're done with our presentation.
Okay. Welcome.
Senator Hannon, members of the committee, my name is Sam Sorkin. I'm the deputy director of the agency. I'm the operations person, lead operations person there. What you have in front of you, or what's been handed out, I think at this point, is a presentation that Bill indicated that's been tailored significantly since 2 weeks ago when it was planned to be maybe a one-hour presentation. Since then, I think we've delivered a lot of performance information to the committee, and what I'd like to do is, as Bill said, take a brief moment just to highlight a few of the elements in here, and I'd be happy to meet with any of you individually or answer any questions that you may have once you have more time to look through it. At the agency, over the last 2 years, it's been a real exciting time. I've really only been with the agency a little more than 2 years, and in that time, I'd say we have evolved more significantly to problem-solving teams that have a toolkit full of programs that we use, as opposed to being an agency that is sometimes been referred to as a collection of programs. I'm not sure if we were ever really that, but certainly within the agency and within state government, we're moving more and more towards a problem-solving model. Within our agency, we've reorganized. In the last 6 months, we now have regional teams that focus on regions and a few specialty teams that manage the programs, in fact, the toolkit. Within state government, as you probably are aware, we have community solutions teams, which represent not only our field teams, but field teams from four other state agencies that are working together in a way that I don't think they were working before the last biennium. Programs that we have are used by the agency. They're also modified each session through legislation. You see that we are rewriting our statute. We have revised various of our finance programs, from the enterprise zone programs to the finance programs, so that they have a sharper focus on the areas that we want to be focusing on. We view our performance measures in a holistic manner at the agency, I think, and we look at the cumulative effects of both the programs and over time. As you recall from the stories about Rainier and Burns and Southern Oregon. Those are projects that resulted in significant impacts, but over 10 years, and through the use of many of the programs that we have at the agency. Simple measures of job creation and return on investment, I don't think, are enough. We need to look at a bigger picture over a longer period of time, and again, a mix of programs rather than just individual programs. The agency, I think, will demonstrate through the report that you have in front of you that it has an ability to focus resources in new directions. I mean that with a capital N and a capital D, the new directions mandate of our commission and the last legislature and the interim working group that helped refine even more so our focus on distressed areas, on those left out of Oregon's boom, on inclusiveness, on partnering, and on livability. And we try to measure our outcomes both in terms of those impacts and in terms of our ability to be a good customer. And you'll see at the end of this report the feedback that we got from our customers through an independent customer survey where we're sort of documenting how good a partner we are, because I think, as you have seen, we are not strictly a financing tool or programs, but some of the adjectives or nouns I've heard described about our agency at these hearings have been partner, leader, guide, assistant, things like that. So let me just turn to the document you have in front of you. This is, as I said, a modified version, maybe reduced somewhat from a six-month report that we submit to our commission, based on a lot of data that we collect at the agency. What I'd like to do is just point you in a few directions. First of all, on page 3, you can generally see the construct of how we view our agency in terms of performance measurement. This is a construct that we developed through our reorganization and has been further refined through some work with the Progress Board on a model called the Balanced Scorecard, which looks at, on the left side of your page there, page 3, the economic development results, the sort of external results that we're trying to achieve, and then on the right side, the management results, and that's where the balanced scorecard term comes from. In terms of what we're trying to do with economic development results, we see ourselves working really in two areas, very simply, working with communities and working with businesses. And in communities, we're trying to build capacity, and with businesses, we're trying to make sure that they are retained, make sure they grow, and make sure that we can attract businesses, the right businesses, to the right places that need them. I'm going to jump you ahead just quickly, again, flipping through this, to one of the focuses that you've heard a lot about on page 9 is a focus on distressed areas of the state. I think the chart there, the map on page 10, shows you areas of high unemployment, certain parts of the state in 1998. If you look at the state as a whole, our unemployment rate for 1998 was 5.6%. That sounds really good. If you look at individual counties, you can see that there's still a number with double-digit unemployment figures. The next page, 10, is a map of the state documenting the distressed areas. The counties with the dots highlighted with dots are considered distressed areas. The cities highlighted with stars are considered distressed communities. All the communities within a county that is considered distressed are considered distressed. This map was developed after the 1997 biennium. Senate Bill 932 put a legislative stamp on this focus of on distressed areas. We developed a methodology and through public hearings developed this map that you see here. What we've done with this map is we have used it as a focusing tool at the agency to make sure that we are moving our resources in the direction of these communities and parts of the state that need it the most. And just as a demonstration of that, on page 11 and 12 of the presentation, you can see that we are mapping on page 11 our investments, and the bar, this is a stacked bar chart that shows you in percentage terms our investment in distressed areas, in mixed areas, and in other areas, and it goes in six-month periods, so you can sort of track this biennium and last biennium, and you can see that over this biennium we have had an increasing percentage of our investments made in distressed areas, and again, this is how we're using this the stressed areas focus at the agency. The line, the dark line drawn through approximately 22% that you see there, that's the percent of the state population that lives in distressed areas. So you can see that while we've always had a focus on distressed areas, we've increased it significantly this biennium. On the next page, page 12, is a similar chart, but it shows our job creation data sorted the same way. And so the stack bar chart again at the bottom, the bottom stack color there, that gray, well, they're all gray, the darker gray is represents job creation in distressed areas, and you can see that we've increased our percentages of jobs created in those areas. The overall numbers of jobs created this biennium are lower than they were in previous biennium, and that to some degree is a reflection of the fact that we have shifted our focus and that the work in distressed areas, the job creation task, is longer term, harder to make happen, and when it does happen, it's not as many jobs as it was in the past. This is on page 12.
I'd like to share, we have the percentages. Where are the actual numbers themselves? Appreciate the percentages.
Yes, I can get you the actual numbers. I think the totals, Bill, you can correct me here if I'm wrong, but yeah, I'll send those to you. I've got the actual numbers. Okay, let's see. In terms of one of the other issues we've talked about here at the committee is infrastructure on page 16. One of the things that we've done at the agency, this really isn't a performance measure, but it's an achievement, is to document the infrastructure needs statewide. That's been a huge effort in the last biennium, and I'd say refined significantly in this biennium. We've amalgamated data that's collected not only by our agency, but by federal partners and other state agencies. And we've documented this need that Yvonne Addington talked to you about when she was here about 10 days ago. On the next page, again, this is just showing the focus on page 17. I'm showing where the investments in infrastructure have been made in the last biennium, well, through December of 98. There's a typo on the bottom of that page, sorry. The source of the data is July 97 through December 98. 96% of our investments are in rural areas, 69% in distressed areas, and in that 18-month period, 100 communities were assisted. On the next page, there's a concept that's under development. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was a more holistic way. This is sort of the new direction that we're heading to in terms of performance measurement. On page 18, we are developing a model for what we call the community capacity continuum, and trying to organize all of our work into three areas of building civic capacity, building infrastructure capacity, and building business development capacity, which is the real focus of, well, all three are the real focus of our agencies. But the nice thing about this model is that in each of these areas, we are working with other state agencies and federal partners as well. And we're developing a way of looking at communities using this model that we hope will be more significant than measuring things like jobs and return on investment. It'll measure whole communities. Let's see. In terms of, we talked a little bit about business assistance, community assistance. In terms of business assistance, let me just show you a couple of items that are included in the report. Page 24 talks about Oregon's rank in new companies, and this data here is Oregon benchmark information, and that's why you have the targets there on the right side of the chart that show that we want to be in the top 10 in terms of rank in new companies. We are currently doing better than that in terms of our rank in new companies per 1,000 employees. One of the focuses of the agency on page 25 is small business development, and we've talked about improving our measurement systems. This is a model that has been developed by the coalition, or the group of partners of small business providers, that was produced through the last biennium. The thing I wanted to focus you on is the middle column. Instead of just measuring activities that we do, which is the right-hand column, or benchmark information, which is about job creation, the sort of final outcome of the result of all your work, that group has been focusing on what we call performance measurement, or interim performance measurement, that are sort of halfway between your activities and your outcomes. And we're that collection, which includes the small business development centers, the minority assistance providers, the government contract acquisition program, and a few others, is now putting all their data together and presenting it, as you see there, where you have $700 million of business expansion documented, a 94% satisfaction rate. And again, with our providers, we're including this new directions focus and that box down there that talks about targeting to rural distressed minority businesses. Collectively, we're measuring the percent of those of our services that are directed at those populations.
Senator, I have a question on part 24. On page 24, the new company ranking.
This is a statewide measure. This doesn't look at distressed areas specifically.
I'd be curious as to how many of the new companies are moving into distressed areas. It seems to me that the kinds of recruitment we do for urban and rural is still quite different. And to some extent they need to be because their needs are different. But I think there could be more similarities in the kinds of businesses we're bringing in. And I'm curious as to how much of the new companies have to do with the high tech that's available in more urban areas and less available in rural areas.
We can take a look at that. We've definitely documented the rural small business assistance that we're providing. And we have efforts that are focused on both growing those fast growth companies that tend to cluster in more urban areas, but even in that effort, there's a strong push to make sure that it really is a statewide effort. But I can see if we can get some numbers on that job, on that business creation figure.
Thank you, Senator Yee.
Following to interview questions on whether they locate in distressed areas or not. And I suspect the answer would be they don't. And if they don't, can we have some idea why don't they? What are the reasons and what is the department's recommendation in overcoming some of these areas? It sure would be nice to see them locate in the distressed area. But what can we do to in counseling to come. Could we have that also?
We have a lot of information on this. There's a deep wealth of knowledge both in the communities. You heard from Roger Lee here from Baker City talking about what it took to get businesses to locate there, and at the agency as well. We've spent a lot of time looking at it, and just very quickly, it has a lot to do with building that continuum that I was showing you earlier on, working on the civic capacity elements. And civic capacity means you've got a plan or a vision for what you want your community to be, that you've got leadership there and volunteerism, a group of volunteers that are willing to put in the hours to sort of make it happen. Peter Williamson here from the Port of St. Helens talked about that team that came together over time. It's also about building infrastructure, having basic water and sewer capacity available in the community. And then it's about trying to figure out what kinds of businesses are likely to come there. What are the strengths that you can sell to a business? And so often, when you just pick up the phone, the calls are, we want to be half an hour, 45 minutes from an international airport. And what we've been doing at the agency and in communities like Baker is trying to figure out what are the types of businesses that don't need to be 45 minutes from an international airport.
Okay. Yes.
So when you go out and advertise about Oregon's availability of industry sites and so forth, do you include the rural areas? Do you just put down Portland, Eugene, Salem, or do you put all the cities who have good available industry sites?
We do it at all the cities. Recently, with some of our partners, the Oregon Economic Development Association, which represents the people focused in these communities most on industrial recruitment and retention strategies, developed an advertising piece, and it does cover all of Oregon.
Senator Diz.
And I'm assuming that 45 minutes from the international airport means 45 minutes by car.
That's usually what they mean.
Because we have little airports scattered all over this state. Some of them have commuter lines, and some of them just have private. But we have a fairly good commuter airbase that can get you to CDS within 45 minutes all over the state. So I think it's just that some of the old ways of looking at things when you move into a state like Oregon don't apply anymore. So you don't have to live in Hillsboro or have your business in Hillsboro to be able to get in and out of CDS to Tokyo.
Well, it's a valid point, and there are business models that exist today that don't require that, and that's what we're looking at the hardest.
But it's still an embarrassment for the state of Oregon not to have a commuter airline coming into Salem, the capital. They come in everywhere else, but they don't come into the capital where all the decision making are supposedly made. So I think what the state needs to do is aggressively go out and offer a small plane company, Inter Carrier, to come into Salem and service Salem, because getting from Medford to Salem, you have to fly to Portland, then rent a car or take the limo back to Salem. And so it may be in close conjunction to Astoria, but it sure is a hell of a long way from Medford. And sometimes it's cheaper to fly to Seattle and then back down, depending on airfare. So,
well, airfare is terrible. I wanted to go to Medford, they told me it was cheaper if I went via Alaska. I didn't have the time, or I probably would have.
Yeah, I probably send you to San Francisco and bring you back up that way.
No, I got a straight shot that it was $400 and some.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out that there's no picnic tickets to Portland Airport from Hillsboro either.
You're well within driving distance compared to what it is in Hillsboro. All right. I forgot Burns. You just playing out of place.
I just want to make one thing certain. When we talk about international airports, I appreciate the fact that we're talking about commuter lines and lots of services and so forth, but I think we need to recognize this, because we have a number of B-52 World War II airstrips in southern and southeastern Oregon that are some of them must 5 or 6 miles long, that will accommodate every kind of commercial flight that would be needed for some of these particular areas. If they're just interested in, cargo, getting cargo in and out, that's one thing, but if they need commuter services, that's a whole different issue.
Yeah, my marijuana firm is using it quite readily now. Let's move on.
I want to move on to the other side of the balance, which is with management results, and I'll wrap up rather quickly here. Again, I'd be happy to come and explain any of this to any of the members of the committee. The management results are about efficiency and customer satisfaction. We've been on page 36. We have one measure of efficiency at the agency, which is the department administrative cost as a percent of the total agency budget for the last two biennium and projected for the 1999-2001 biennium. And basically the administration cost is a very small number relative to the overall total, less than 2% overall. I want to launch into just some highlights of an independent survey that was conducted of our agency, just recently completed, I think in April, or finally submitted here in May of 1999. Well, actually, one interesting chart in terms of performance, but before we jump into that, page 38 shows leverage. Again, one of the things that we like to be sure that we're doing is partnering, working with others, filling gaps, using the dollars that we have to help lever private sector and other public sector funds, federal and other. And so the agency funds, the funds that we're managing, you can see here in is the first bar in each of these 6 month periods. The lighter colored one, the dark colored one, are funds that are leveraged. As you can see in this biennium, we're still leveraging funds at a rate of 2 or 3, maybe in the last 6 month period ending 98, 3.5 to 1 or something. They're certainly not as large as they were when we were leveraging and using some of our dollars to help place a company like Hyundai when they were investing a couple of billion. So the leverage has gone down, but it has something to do with the new focus that we have at the agency. But still,
could I ask you, on your July to December 96, where you have a buzz leverage and indicates it has Hyundai. How many businesses would be considered part of that long line? Hyundai wasn't all of it.
No, certainly wasn't all of it.
So how much of it was on an average other businesses? Do you have that breakdown?
I can get you that breakdown. I don't
okay,
have
the
it.
The other question I have is, that's July, December 97, January, June 98, July, December 98, it became fairly stagnant and consistent, very little fluctuation. The question I have is, how many businesses were able to leverage money during that period of time?
Okay, I'll get you that. I'll get you that figure.
I'm not saying your figures aren't good, but it doesn't tell you much about how much went in to job creation. Other than a straight line here, it says Hyundai was a major player, but then it shows a period of not so tremendous growth during that other period of, 18 months or so.
I'll get you some numbers on those for the leverage figures.
All right,
numbers.
Okay.
What does it exactly mean by leverage funds? Is that federal money, national fund, or what are you talking about?
It is. It's anything other. It's how we use agency grants to lever other funds that aren't managed by the agency. So it includes, for example, funding that we might use to assist in the recruitment of a U.S. gypsum, and there we would consider our piece of the funds along with funds. The leverage might be made up of funds coming from other federal agencies, some other state agencies, and then we would add in the investment made by U.S. gypsum, the couple hundred million that they were investing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is this to assist distressed areas to attract industry federal money to help the timber decline communities to attract new industry? But
yeah.
Eugene is another timber decline affected community.
Well, Eugene was a timber affected community, and I think at this point in time it's on the rebound significantly, and I don't think Hyundai was the only thing that made the difference, but
the leverage is Hyundai's money, not federal money.
That's right.
What federal money?
Federal, I mean, in that case, the leverage would be money invested by Hyundai, not by the federal government.
But what is the leverage?
Leverage is, this is a measure we've used for a long time that was actually developed in conjunction with the Trade and Economic Development Committee back in the 1980s. And it essentially is any investment that is made in the same project we invest in. So it can be federal, it can be other state agencies, it can be local government sources, but typically at least half of it would be private company investment.
There's a $1 billion investment from public funds?
No. All we're doing here is just comparing, sort of showing how much money other people invested in the same projects that we invested state money in. So that's a mixture of private and public money. So the bar on the left is the department's investment, and the bar on the right is other people's investment in the same projects.
Private money?
Private or public. But it's not department.
Okay. Thank you. You want to continue?
Yes, yeah, so I'll just wrap up here. Starting on page 40 is just a few pages from a customer survey. The rest of the customer survey document is now on your desk. I believe we handed that out to you so you can review it in more detail. Page 40, the conclusion of Bardsley and Neidhart, the marketing firm, is that their survey represents a portrait of satisfaction. Going on to page 41, some of the key points from their customer survey are that 98% of the respondents indicated that the department contributed to their results. 85% feel that the department's services are valuable. There are very few complaints. And the nice gratifying news to me as an operations person is that we got very high marks for our people. The commitment and dedication of our staff and their professionalism was repeatedly cited. On page 42, you see a graphic representation of one of the highlights that I just talked about, the value of our services. It's gratifying to see that they went from high to even higher, and I hope we can see that number continue in the future. Page 43 is a chart of just inclination to recommend the department to others. That stays static at 97%. We'll try to improve on that, but we feel that's a pretty strong statement about the agency. This is the second time that we're conducting the survey. The commitment and dedication of our staff and their professionalism was repeatedly cited. On page 42, you see a graphic representation of one of the highlights that I just talked about, the value of our services. It's gratifying to see that they went from high to even higher, and I hope we can see that number continue in the future. Page 43 is a chart of just inclination to recommend the department to others. That stays static at 97%. We'll try to improve on that, but we feel that's a pretty strong statement about the agency. This is the second time that we're conducting the survey, so next biennium we'll have a third set of numbers to be able to present to you. The conclusion on page 44 of the report is, again, a portrait of satisfaction. However, there are areas where we need fine-tuning, and those are their words. And specifically, it has to do with response times. Communities felt pleased with our response times in several areas, but they really thought the application process could be faster and easier. And we're really working on that, and part of our regional team focus is that customers shouldn't have to worry about the applications for all these different programs. Our staff should help them figure them out. Part of the problem was, in the past, people were shopping the agency for programs. With businesses, they'd like a faster response time, and we're going to try to see if we can improve that. Businesses are, of course, your most demanding customer as a government agency, and to be nimble and to be government is sometimes an oxymoron, but I think we're one agency that really needs to do that effectively, and we'll continue to work on that.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions? Cindy?
I had a preview of your benchmark because I was interested, and I saw one diagram that wasn't shown here, and that was the job growth has been strong in the 90s, but it's still very low for 1998. Did you have that diagram or the chart that maybe the committee members can have? Because it shows very low for 98. Our job growth is low in 98. And I thought maybe the department can comment, why is it low in 98?
Okay, I think I had that piece of data that you were interested in.
See, in 97 it was 55,927. And in 98 it's gone to only half of it.
The chart is showing net job growth in Oregon over the 90s, and essentially this is the difference between jobs created and jobs destroyed in the economy, and it shows the figure dropping down in 1998 from almost 56,000 to 30,000. I don't have all the reasons or complete understanding of that number, although I think it would be fair to say that this has something to do with the downturn in the Asian economy.
Mr. Chairman Senator Yee, I think there are two big reasons here. One is the downturn in the Asian economy and the reduction in demand for manufacturing, high-tech manufacturing exports as a result. The second is really that there's been a worldwide slump in the semiconductor industry, and as you know, there has been a good deal of layoffs in that business, and at the same time, we've had pretty tough price conditions in both forest products and agriculture. So for a combination of reasons, while Oregon had been outperforming the country for several years, we underperformed the country in 98, and I think that the Council of Economic Advisors believes that condition will pretty much work its way through by the end of 99, although we expect that probably all of 99 will probably underperform the country again.
It's such a drop that, you know, I want to know the reason and what we can do to bring the drop back up.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any more questions at committee members? No, thank you very much. Mr. Scott?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the one other thing I wanted to be sure that committee members didn't have any other questions on our other performance measurement information that we provided. I think it got passed out to you early last week, which is the program-by-program performance data. And we answered some questions about it last week, but I just to briefly recap, what we tried to do is provide for each identifiable program the items that are itemized in the statute governing the biennial report, showing the amount of investment. Secondly, the essentially what we did in terms of impact on competitiveness and workforce skills was to indicate whether, in fact, the program was targeted to or used by traded sector industries, and whether it was targeted to or used for upgrading workforce skills. The number in those situations where we count jobs, which is pretty much all our business programs, but not necessarily our infrastructure and community development programs, how many jobs were created. This is in the first 18 months of the biennium, what the average wage of those jobs were. We have pretty good, all our programs are now, not all of them are at 100%, but most of them have pretty good wage data. Then the cost per job is simply a division of the job count by the investment. The return on investment is a calculation, and what it means is the first item on capital access was at 479%. What that means is that over the assumed life of the job, which would normally be 9 years, because that's the average according to the Employment Department, that the investment would be recouped 4.8 times, if you will. So that would be another way to state the same thing, but that the, and that means that in state personal and corporate income taxes that would be generated by the jobs created there would be equal to 479% of the investment that's listed. As we've pointed out before, we've been strongly urged by the experts who considered this not to try to compare programs based on that data, because there's so much generalization or estimation involved that it's not necessarily a meaningful comparison. You will know that there are a couple of programs on the first page where we have a not applicable. That's not because that's basically because they would have an infinite return, because essentially they're now making money, or positive cash flow programs based on investments made in earlier biennium, so that we actually, they had more cash coming in than going out during the period in question. Then we had a column for...
Sure. Senator Duke. Hello, Neil Fight News Area. So let me ask some basic questions.
for your loan programs, isn't return on the investment, don't you track the loan money? And when it gets repaid, that's your return on investment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, there are many ways to calculate return on investment. What we tried to do with the aid of many people was to try to get something that could, that would apply to not just the loan programs, but to other kinds of programs. So what this particular category can provide for any of our loan programs, what the default rate or what the actual what the return that's being made on the loans made. That's not what this number is. This number is for the, essentially for the state money that was net invested during the period, what the expected return to the state general fund would be, so that in effect the money that the program makes would be a over and above that, and for those two programs that actually, are bringing in more cash than they're putting out, that you see, I can't make that kind of a calculation. But yes, we could make an alternate, and we do have a number for each of those programs that would show you how much they make on the money they loan.
I guess for all of these, that's the sort of thing I would like to see, is what we're actually getting out of it is compared to what we project we're getting out of it. Sort of like earlier, especially when I asked about tracking jobs. We believe if we invest so much in a company, given so many targeted tax breaks, that we will get this many jobs. But apparently we don't track them to make sure that the jobs are still there 3 years later. It seems to me some of this would be fairly simple. But that's because I don't know a lot about it. It's simpler when you don't know much. That we loan the money and we get this money back, ideally, and at a certain rate of interest, that would be the state's return on the investment or the agency's return. And so, too, some of the other ones, they create jobs so that the return to the state. I mean, if we track the jobs and the dollar amount of the jobs, then we know what we're getting back in income tax. We know when the company actually starts paying property taxes or income tax, how much money. So we know fairly concretely, I think, what that new business is returning to the state of Oregon, what our return is for the investment we've made. Those things would seem to be helpful to me in trying to figure out which direction we ought to go, whether a certain program is truly producing for us like we thought it was going to.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, the issue of what the money being earned by the direct loan programs is a calculation that we do make and can provide you with. That really is only applies to these two programs, and I think Special Public Works and Water Wastewater are the only programs we have that make direct loans, so that they can do that.
What about the other companies? For example, if ABC Widget Company is located in Burns, and they, do we follow them for 5 years to know that they produce the number of jobs at the wages we expected? And do we connect with the Department of Revenue to know that they're paying X number of dollars? I mean, you can't get maybe the specifics, but at least somebody can extrapolate to know that we're getting approximately this much in the way of income tax. And after they've finished their enterprise zone exemptions or whatever other exemptions we gave them, that they are now producing so much in our property tax. Do we do that sort of follow-up? I mean, that seems to me what's good for the community. If ABC Widgets was only there for 3 years, it helped the community a little bit, but long-term it's nothing to base their future on?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, the kind of second part of your question, the answer is basically no. We don't routinely or systematically follow up on the number of jobs created
in most cases, they don't necessarily follow up on the wages, although some of our programs do require that, both jobs and wages, and nor do I think any of our programs routinely get information from revenue on taxes paid. However, the systems to do that are possible but expensive, I guess, is basically the answer. Several times, and from a variety of information we do collect, we have opportunities to sort of check and say, does this make sense? And, you know, as we checked, I think the various one-time program evaluations or audits that we've done have always shown that on average we get more job creation and higher wages than what we were estimating at the time that it happened. That doesn't mean it happens on every project, obviously, but I think we're fairly comfortable that's true, and for that reason we have found, and our commission has felt, that the expense of a system to routinely follow that isn't justified. We can certainly, at any point where we think there's a serious question about whether that follow-up is happening, it's possible to do a study whether it's for a specific program or across the board, that would do that, but we haven't up to now seen a reason to, because it appears that we're getting at least what we bought into. There are situations, primarily the strategic investment program, where the counties have, if you get permission from the companies and set it up, you can get a lot of data, and I think the Portland Enterprise Zone and maybe some others also do the same thing, which is set up a system where the local government tracks individual companies' data in order to decide whether they're getting their money's worth out of a tax, local option tax relief. But we don't require that. Our statute doesn't require that.
Okay. I guess it's a concern that sort of over the years I've wondered. The infrastructure programs that we do, wastewater and all that for cities and counties, that we've got a huge project there and we've got to keep going and we're making incremental improvements and it's necessary. But when we go into the business of creating jobs, we've been at it for almost 20 years. And it seems to me for the billions of dollars that we've put into it, at some point we ought to have enough fun. Now, I know that that's too simplistic a statement, but we don't track this stuff. And I guess it's because it's free money. As long as people keep gambling, we're going to have it. But it just seems to me at some point we ought to track it and wonder where the heck. You expect some companies not to pan out, but over 5 to 10 years, how do we do?
Well, I think the agency has tried to express that and explain that is that you cannot do a one-size synopsis and say for each job that was created in Washington County, which was created an equal number of jobs in Klamath County or Malheur County. We do it a little bit differently each area. I think that's what this is an attempt to show is, this is a per job cost that you're investing in what you're creating, but it's probably lacking some detailed information that would probably be hard to come by.
I'd be happy if we even knew whether those businesses that we created over the last 10 years were still in business and whether the wages that they told us they were going to pay were still there. Apparently, we don't know that.
Robin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Yee has proposed a budget note that asked the department to come back and talk to the emergency board about how they propose to measure and report on outcomes. It sounds to me like there's a lot of differing concerns about how the agency tracks performance. It sounds to me like it's something more than just an emergency board report. I'm wondering if it might not be more appropriate to direct the agency to work with the Interim Trade and Economic Development Committee to come up with a broader definition of what it is that the agency is measuring, get that kind of feedback, and then after the Trade and Economic Development Committee has worked with the agency, then report to the Emergency Board on what has been adopted.
The reason I proposed this budget note is because I'm very frustrated with the information the department provided, because it doesn't seem to be accurate and doesn't seem to be complete, and it is something very difficult to understand. I took it upon myself to prepare a chart which I presented to all members, and I feel it's much easier to read and much more common sense approach. And if you look at the return in investment, and if it shows $4.50 per dollar invested, it obviously is pretty cost effective program. And another program shows you only get 88 cents back per dollar invested. It probably isn't very cost effective or efficient use of our dollars. That's why I proposed a budget note that they ought to give us information they use to decide which program deserves more either continuation or more investment, and which program really is not worth investing. So I thought if they can develop criteria we can use, methodology they use, and guidelines they use to determine what is something we can see about the performance of each program. Because if you look at their film and video, it reports $65 return per investment for each dollar invested in the biannual report. But in the chart, it shows $182 return per dollar invested. And when we ask them in the committee, they say, no, it's $192 return on investment. So we need to know what methodology do they use, and something common sense we can do for a better understanding on return on investment. And I like Robin's idea about work with Trade and Economic Development and report back to Emergency Board, and withhold $1 million on their new program. So before they put money into new program, we know what criteria do they use. So we appreciate the committee's consideration.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think it sounds to me like there, because the agency has a variety of programs, not all targeted at the same kind of outcome, that there needs to be some sort of definition of the kinds of measurements that would be done depending on the type of outcome that is intended. Not all programs are directed at job creation or at immediate job creation, for example. And my concern about withholding funding is that it sounds to me like it's something that is of a fairly extensive duration to come up with that. And if we are wanting the agency to do the kind of job that they need to do to get the kind of data and the kind of reporting that the next legislature needs, we may not want to be pushing them to do this quicker than they ought to by withholding the funding.
Mr. Chair, I hope Representative Butler. I really am concerned and would echo the concern of legislative fiscal. I appreciate Robin's sensitivity towards that. If we start to withhold those expenditures, particularly for those new programs that could affect the small and emerging businesses and the minority businesses, that would in effect defeat what we know to be some very excellent programs with high rates of return on them. And I'm concerned that those should have the necessary funding. We know those are successful. And because we do know those are successful.
Yes. Representative Butler, I'm not recommending withholding money on existing programs. I'm saying withholding money on new programs that we don't know their performance yet. There's $1 million here for new programs, and we don't know whether they are going to be a duplication
of existing service or how successful they're going to be. We want some criteria in our hands before putting money in new programs.
No, I'd like to stop discussion right now. Wait till we get into work session, because we're out of time to stay here. It's running the 10 and a half close when the session's in. So Mr. Scott is trying to do a wrap-up here this morning.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to make another comment. I think this is primarily 10-class job creation. Because we are all concerned with job creation, and especially with enterprise zones, they track job creation, otherwise they lose the privilege of property tax exemption. So they do have to track job creation. So it should not be that difficult to do. They're doing it already for enterprise zones, which is a major requirement.
You want to continue with your stuff?
Mr. Chairman, I think we're basically done. The only other recap I had to do was Robin, I'm trying to remember, did we pass out that recap of the program option packages that I gave you?
Yes.
Friday, that's already been passed out.
Yeah, they're in our program.
Okay, so I just wanted to remind you that you do have a single sheet that goes back over the $55 million that's in the program option packages to be paid for with lottery bonds, because I know there were some members asking about, you know, walking through that one more time. So I could answer questions about that if anybody had them, but I wanted to be sure you knew that you had that one-page sheet.
You mean the $45 million?
Well, there's a $45 million, then down at the bottom of the page, $10 million for Columbia River Channel Deepening.
Is there any questions on the money to be used? We'll be dealing with that in the lottery allocation bill. Okay. I think we've got enough senators and we've got enough house rules. Let's close the hearing and House Bill 5015 and open the work session on House Bill 5015. Mr. Scott, would you come back up and just stay there in case we need to ask some questions?
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I have another concern I'd like to bring up.
Okay.
I don't know whether we should bring up at budget hearing or now. I want to express a concern that the housing rehabilitation program funding being reduced by 60%. And I don't understand the reason for it, because housing rehab program has been very effective in helping rehabilitate housing in the rural area. Is very cost effective. You can help about at least 6 houses compared to, I mean, the unit cost is about 2,000 or 3,000 per unit in the rural area, compared to building new construction per unit cost about $19,000. So it's a 1-to-6 ratio, and I don't understand the department reducing the funding by 60% and increase mandates to make it difficult for counties and cities to apply for this program.
Senator, there is that proposed budget note that would address those issues. It would direct the Department of Economic Development to work with the Department of Housing and Community Services to use the most cost-effective and efficient means to provide public support and to leverage private funding for single-family housing assistance to low-income Oregonians. In making these changes, the Department must consult with all interested parties and report back to the next legislative assembly on the improvements that have been made for Oregon's housing rehabilitation delivery system. I think with that budget note, it'll probably address in its entirety the housing, community services, and economic development working together on this.
Mm-hmm.
So before any rule changes, they need to work with housing department and all the involved partners.
Correct.
Before they change any rules.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, who proposed this budget?
I actually do not know who where it came from.
I think it came from Ms. Rayburn.
Oh, yes. So is there going to be a survey conducted regarding the needs of the housing rehab compared to needs of the new construction in cities? I understand the housing department was doing a survey on that, and I would be interested in hearing the survey on the needs before any changes are made.
Well, let me say this in reason. This housing rehab program is the only part of housing Department of Economic Development has in its budget, and this budget will direct them to coordinate their activities with Housing Community Services. Housing Community Services is the agency that your question would be directed towards to get the information on housing rehabs and whether it's city, rural, or wherever it is. I don't think Economic Development can give you all that indication because they basically are just a pass-through agency. These federal funds come to Department of Economic Development, they pass it over to housing, and housing goes out and does it. And so I'm not sure if they can quite honestly respond because they don't track all the money that goes to housing department, and then the monies are accounted for over there. Ms. Lamont, is that...
I believe that's substantially correct. I'll discuss my question regarding the survey with housing.
Yes.
As long as there will be no rule change until a discussion is made, I'll be satisfied with it.
Thank you. Mr. Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we do need to get the 1999 federal fiscal year program funds, move forward with that. We are in discussion with the housing department all the time. We have an agreement with the housing department that we're going to relook.
That's my question regarding the survey with housing.
Yes.
As long as there will be no rule change until a discussion is made, I'll be satisfied with it.
Thank you. Mr. Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we do need to get the 1999 federal fiscal year program funds, move forward with that. We are in discussion with the housing department all the time. We have an agreement with the housing department that we're going to relook at the administration of the program in time for the 2001 year effort. But the whole point of it is that that both our department, but particularly housing, wants to increase the amount of funding for single-family housing rehabilitation, but both they and we believe that the way we currently provide for that is very inefficient in terms of its use of public funds, and we want to come up with a better way. So that's the purpose of the temporary reduction in the level of funding, is to give us a chance to study and experiment with alternative ways that would leverage a great deal more private money.
Thank you.
I just want to say, according to the department survey, the cities and counties are 41 in favor of keeping the status quo. So I don't believe any change should be made to disseminate this program, decimate this program.
Okay. All right. We're going to go into work session now. Ms. Lamont has a handout that she has presented to all the members. And Robin, if you'd like to do a presentation.
I will do that. I'd like to recommend, and we don't have a house forum at this point, but I would like to recommend, in the interest of making sure we don't have to go back when we look at things, that as we walk through, that we get the consensus of the committee on each of the numbered items, and that way we won't have to go back and revisit them.
Okay.
Very clear. Just for information,
yeah.
I'm going to leave in about 15 minutes. Very much pressure.
No. That's okay. We'll be here at a Labor Day.
With the agreement of the committee, unless there is some interest in doing a current service level walkthrough, I would suggest that we skip that section and that we just get that we just adopt the current service level. There's pretty standard changes in there, and so unless there are any specific questions, we can just move on.
Are there any questions on the current service level?
Okay.
Is everybody working out some things to make sure we're okay? All right.
And
all right, if you want to move on to the next.
Yes, and for the information of the committee, the adjustments that I will be talking about are on page 2 of 2 of my spreadsheet. If you would like to track them. Yes, page 2.
Okay.
So now that we've had our form here, it's a figure of the approval of the committee that we basically adopt the current service level.
All right. Representative Crater moves that we approve the current service level on the House Bill 515 for the Department of Economic Development. Is there any discussion? Is there objections? If not, it's been so approved. All right.
I'm recommending that we approve the following actions by fund type. This is 2A, General Fund. Reduce the governor's budget by $385,295. That includes the following reductions. $73,607 administrative efficiencies. That's the 4% reduction, and that is to the Arts Commission and the Progress Board. $39 for Attorney General reductions. $200,000 and one FTE for the Cultural Task Force, which is funded in House Bill 2005. And $111,649 to eliminate funding and one limited duration position in the Progress Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Crager.
So it eliminates the package, plus it would eliminate the current limited duration position?
That is correct.
So how many people do they have now then?
They would have 3.
Yes, sir.
And can I ask half of House Bill 2005? Is that in this committee or somewhere else? Or?
Mr. Chair, I can't remember whether it's in this committee or general government, but it is out of general government, and it is
what's
through
the
House.
What's the funding in there?
And it's through the House and on its way to the Senate.
So all this is just technical, Jeff?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gibbs.
Small IV 4 there, $111,649 to eliminate funding, and is that part of the 4% or is that on top of?
That is on top of.
On top of.
So,
yes.
How would this affect the Progress Board by eliminating $111,000?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee are going to reduce their capability. That position has been in place for a couple of biennia, I believe, at least one full biennium. And so this would be, in essence, a reduction to their current service level.
Can you give us a percentage amount to give us an idea? Is it a 10% reduction?
5% reduction.
5% reduction.
If there are four positions, then we're cutting one.
I think the total budget of the Progress Board is what, 10? $661,000 from the grant. I was talking about staffing. The the $111,000 was to, essentially what the progress board has been doing, has been using a limited duration position and essentially been reducing the amount of contract service services or supplies that it was able to buy, and the idea was to essentially to increase the to fund the position so that they could, this $111,000 would have in effect restored their $100,000 of contracting capacity there. They typically have had to, for all the studies they do, go hat in hand and collect money from others, and they really wanted a little more money of their own to do that with. That I think, and the major effect is that that increase won't occur. Plus, of course, they'll have one less person.
Hey, Representative Sir,
just trying to get this straight in my mind. They're asking for that. They're asking for one additional person, and instead they're not only not giving them that, but we're taking one away.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they have had a limited duration position that has been providing services. They are requesting permanent funding, and that is not approved in this package.
Can you get out of it? Are we actually cutting dollars out of this, out of the budget, or are we just not giving them what they want to increase them?
The net effect is a reduction.
I was going to say.
By not carrying forward the position, the temporary position that was requested to be a full-time position. And so the net effect is you're reducing the request. Their request was $111,000. Mr. Friel?
For the record, Kelly Friel, the Department of Administrative Services. Now, if I understand this correctly, the package was to take an existing limited duration position, make it permanent,
right,
and add the funding for the permanent position. My question is, keep that position as a limited duration and use existing funding. Is that the intent of the committee, or do you want to eliminate that position?
The recommendation is to eliminate the package funding request and the position.
And the limited duration position.
That's correct.
Okay. That would be a cut to the program. Essentially what would happen is that the Progress Board would have resources to for the contracting, but they would have one less staff that has been there since the inception of the Progress Board.
What this action does is to eliminate Package 471, including the funding and the position authority.
And the permanent position authority.
Correct.
So if I understand that, Mr. Chair, what we could do at the committee so approved is we could essentially maintain the status quo, where we have three permanent positions and one limited duration position.
Okay.
That's what I'm hearing. That's what we understood. Maintain the status quo. That's what.
Mr. Friel, if you and staff would communicate, we'll try it again.
Okay. What this action does, and I am not getting into what they do with limited duration positions, is that they requested a permanent position and funding.
Correct.
To replace a limited duration position.
Correct.
Okay? This action deletes the permanent position and the funding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now,
that's what we thought it was.
Okay, if there is intent to do other kinds of activities to maintain that within the existing current service level, that's fine.
Yeah. So if we could just change that to eliminate one permanent position, that would make us I think the intent of what the committee wants to do.
So that it would be a limited duration position.
Yeah, it would give us the opportunity to make it a limited duration position.
Okay, out of retention revenue.
Out of
retention
revenue. Especially what you're seeking.
Thank you. What is the current service level for Progress Board?
3 full-time and 1 limited duration.
Correct. And what is the amount?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, in general funds, the Progress Board at current service level would have $693,331.
And what is it after this action number 4?
With that $693,000, you'd have 3 positions and essentially 1 limited duration one. With the package, we'd have $804,980, which is adding this package in, and you'd essentially have the same 4 positions, except they would all be permanent now.
So, Mr. Chairman, for clarification, so after package 471 is not approved, what is the net amount?
Well, that's a bunch of other actions. If just for this particular action, we'd be back to the current service level of $693,331 general fund, and we'd be back to 3 permanent positions, and if the divisions or departments so wanted, they would continue the limited duration within existing resources. Essentially, we would go back to where we are today.
So, Mr. Chairman, so your thing is, patch 471 is not approved, their current service level will remain status quo.
Mr. Chair, Senator V, yes, with this particular action, I think Robin has some other actions, but for this particular action, you are correct.
And they will still have 3 permanent positions and 1 limited duration?
Mr. Chair, Senator V, that's my understanding.
Okay, so no addition.
Okay, is there further discussion?
Is the general fund adjustment approved?
The chair would move the general fund adjustment item I
2A.
What do we do all?
Item 1,
item 2, item 3, and item 4 under General Fund 2A. Is there objection? Representative Schrader.
I'm not sure we finally agreed to on that. Do we have to change the wording that says and 1 limited duration position?
I will clarify that
we'll
this
that
conversion,
yes,
conversion of it. 1 that eliminates the conversion of 1 limited duration position.
Okay. That basically maintains the status quo. Right. Okay. Yes. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. Can we go through the lottery funds here under sub B, 2B?
I'll do it as quickly as I can.
That is the House room and Shane wasn't sure if I'd wrap this up.
All right, there.
The recommendation is to increase the governor's budget by $2,678,528. This includes the following adjustments. Reduce $2,447 for Attorney General reductions. Reduce $200,000 for international trade. That is package package 101. Reduce transfer Transfer $200,000 from the Community Development Fund to program services to support international trade, and also reduce $63,000 staff support to the China Trade Office included in the Senate Bill 1129. Those are items Roman numeral 2 and Roman numeral 6. Eliminate the governor's bond package debt service cost of $1,157,832, add $4,208,428, the debt service on the bond package in House Bill 2153, reduce $99,620 to reflect the adjusted revenue and revenue forecast, and that was an adjustment we made based on the mortgage forecast. And that comprises the lottery funds adjustment recommending.
I move approval on the secure lottery fund. Okay, Representative Schrader moves approval. Is there questions?
I have a question. Mr. Chairman, I know the fiscal impact of Senate Bill 1129 and 1130 is $230,000. Where does it show in the budget?
Senator Yee, $167,000 of that is the lottery funds allocation to the China Trade Office,
right,
was biennium that wasn't spent. The additional $63,000 is the reduction that shows in B6 below.
Well, here it says we do staff support. Shouldn't it show as an increase in staff support?
There should be a 4 in there. Reduce $63,000 for staff support to the China Trade Office included in Senate Bill 1129.
It's going to appear in Senate Bill 1129. We're getting it out of here and transferring it over to 1129.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's routing from one to give to someone else.
So the return
is someone else's name.
The return is
the
actual
easy class.
It's
not
higher.
They were
more
great.
Yeah.
More vacant. And this is the
there'll be more money.
Representative Schrader now moves that we approve the lottery funds request.
Next
item. Item 2B. Items 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Is there further discussion? If not, it's been so approved. You know, the House members have to go to a caucus, and so that eliminates our quorum. And we'll reconvene at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in a workstation on this bill. We've got to try to wrap it up.
So we approve two things, right?
Yes. You're adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow.